follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Green Talk Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit thegreentalknetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture is making changes and valuable contributions to the health and well-being of the less developed world around us. Join founder Michael Bumstead today on Growing People from the Ground Up. Michael, his co-host Tom Rockwood, and guest speakers will show you what's being done now and how you can help.
Welcome to Growing People from the Ground Up. We're delighted that you have joined with us today. Over the next several weeks, we're going to talk about the program that we have in the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture, the work that we're doing throughout the world, and how we help other people to become self-sufficient on growing their own food so that they can feed their children and that they can be healthy, happy, and strong. This program is for all of those, wherever you live, so that if you want to apply these principles in your own family life, you're welcome to do so. This show is also for those who have a desire to give back and want to join with us in this great work. Now, I have with me, and it's an honor for me to have Tom Rockwood as my co-host. His bio you can read on the show description, but very briefly, just to talk about Tom. He is well known for his speaking abilities, and so I asked him to join with me on this show, and I'm delighted to have him with me. Tom, let me ask you a question, if I may. What was it about our program of the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture that impressed you and wanted you to help me on the show?
Thank you, Mike. First of all, what intrigues me about your program is really threefold. First, as a father of a large family, of course, and an active family, food nutrition have always been important to my wife and I. Not always easy in an abundant land that we live in here in America where excesses can come pretty easily. We used to joke that our family motto was that we didn't eat until we were full, we ate until we were tired. And sadly, of course, a lot of the people in the world don't have that luxury. But we have tried, whether it be homemade, unprocessed, more of a balanced meal to provide for our family. And it's truly, of course, one of our family's largest expenditures. But secondly, as a concerned citizen of the world, I am well aware of the imbalance of good food and nutrition in the world and feel some responsibility there, although not really knowing what to do about it, which leads me into my final reason I'm so intrigued about being asked to join you, Mike, in your program, is simply learning from you. Our families have been, we've known each other for over a dozen years, and it's been a pleasure watching you and your good wife, Diane, living exciting lives while constantly finding ways to serve and the less fortunate all across the globe. For people like me that feel a sense of responsibility but are often at a loss of what to do with it, I'm excited that our listeners and I will be able to learn from you, who is truly walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Tom. I think first off in the show, we need to explain to our audience what the challenge is out there for small farmers, which is a majority of where the poverty lives throughout the developing world. If I can give a short history here, and if I take too long, Tom, you let me know, okay, because I could talk for hours on this. The basic problem for the small farmer, which is 800 million people throughout the world, about 80% of all those people who live on less than a dollar a day. Their main problem is the model that they choose to try to feed their family with. They have a small plot of land. It could be an acre to 2.5 acres, which is a hectare of land, somewhere in that range. And they try to feed their family by growing a monocrop and then selling in the market. This doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because of today's cultures throughout the world. It's measured on monetary basis, and people try to compete on a monetary basis, and so they try to sell their food in the market. The large agribusiness is so efficient today that they cannot compete, and therefore, when they sell their food in a market off a very small plot of land, they cannot get enough monetary return to feed their family nutritionally. I could say a lot about that and give statistics, but I don't think it's necessary right now. What we do in our program is we take the small farmer out of the market. And you may think that's kind of crazy, but we do. We take them out of the market. We take that same plot of land that they have been growing a monocrop, whether it's, when I say monocrop, I mean one crop, like all corn, all beans, whatever. And we take them away from the market, and we divide that same plot of land up that they were using for this market concept, and we divide it into little patches. And we have them grow a number of different crops. It could be a number of field crops, such as corn, wheat, quinoa, beans, so on and so forth. We also have vegetables, and we're going to be talking about that, a very specific plan to get a lot of vegetables in a small plot of land. We'll be talking about that next week. But we add vegetables into the diet. Also, this small plot of land is used for raising foliage for small animals, but because we add small animal protein into their diet. So what we do is we have them feed their family first. And this is not a new concept. This is the concept that all pioneers throughout the world, in any pioneering environment, when they move away from the big cities and move into an environment where they have to feed their family first, they're not worried about getting their product in the market. They're worried about feeding their family. This has been done throughout the history of man. So it's not a new concept. We're taking them back to something that has worked for centuries. And also we have their family use part of the excess of this crop to sell in the market because they do need some money. And I'll be talking at the end of the show about a specific family that I have known that I want to highlight and tell you the example of the experience this family had. So that's basically our story to the audience and to the world, is we take the small farmer, we take that same plot of land that he has been trying to raise enough money to feed his family, and we've raised the food on that same plot of land to feed his family. That's our program, and it works very well.
Mike, I got to say this, it sounds groundbreaking because it's so different, but as you said, it's really the way things were for centuries, and we've gotten away from it. So I'm excited. I think oftentimes for us in our society, we don't see the huge fluctuations that people in many third world countries see when they go to try to buy food as far as the prices. In fact, you might not be aware out there, but yesterday, believe it or not, in the United States, it was National Food Day. And, of course, I'd never heard of it before either until I started reading a little bit about it. It was backed by an impressive advisory board that includes anti-hunger advocates, physicians, authors, politicians, and leaders of groups focused on everything from farmers markets to animal welfare to public health. But the main focus is on providing nutrition. And I think that's really what's so exciting about your program. In fact, I was interested that even a neighboring state, the state of Idaho yesterday, celebrated Food Day up at their state capitol. And it was interesting. They had a group there that basically just a bunch of power brokers that are trying to push good nutrition. And it's interesting. They indicated nearly 16% of Idahoans. Now, this is here in the States. Idahoans were food insecure. and nearly one in five persons don't know where their next meal were coming from. So that's right here in the U.S., just not in third world countries.
Wow. How about that article we were looking at just the other day, Tom, the one about how food would be impacted in London?
Yes, in fact, there's been some studies and some trials on food insecurity. Really, if the Western world had to deal with the fluctuations that a family in the third world does daily, I mean, we're not just talking seasonal differences in you know, we love asparagus around our house. If you tried to buy it now, it's probably $4, $5, $6 a pound, but in the spring, it's 99 cents. We're talking about essentials, bread, milk, grain, that can fluctuate as much as eight times the price from day to day, just depending on who's providing it, civil unrest, government issues, and frankly, people that would do harm to their neighbors, and that's scary. And so the question would be, are we prepared? Are we in a position where we can become self-reliant enough to be able to weather the storm if something like that happened in our own supermarkets?
Okay. I had been a donor to this program for a number of years. When I sold my manufacturing firm back in 1998, our family created a family foundation, and we started funding these programs in South America. And as a donor, I was absolutely taken in with these people. If you ever visit these people down in country, in the countries that we work in, you would be emotionally connected with them. The family I'm going to be talking about later on in the program is one of those many families that I have been emotionally connected with. And I just have a desire to continue to make sure that this program is taken to the world. That's what we're doing here. I'm going to be taking a short break in just a few minutes, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Dr. Paul Johnston. He is one of the founders in this program back in the 80s. He was one of two men that were instrumental as professors at BYU that helped develop this program. And you mentioned that our program that we take was originally designed there. And it is nutritionally based, and that's what our talk is specifically on, nutrition. So when we come back to Paul Johnston, that we will be talking about his history and his maybe we can ask him about just the very basics about what how this program developed. And he is a professor of nutrition and research today. And he is one of the founders as well. So you will find the information that he gives very, very helpful.
Thank you. Well, this is Growing People from the Ground Up with the founder, Mike Mumstead, from the Institute of Self-Reliant Agriculture. And we'll talk to you after the break.
This is the Voice America Green Living Channel. Spread the green.
In a world where parents struggle to feed their own children, the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture is dedicated to teaching families how to grow, what to eat, and how to become self-sufficient. By giving people the right tools to grow their food, we're not just growing crops, we are growing people. Your host, Michael Bumstead, president of Self-Reliant Agriculture, shares stories of struggle, success, and perseverance that families and communities experience in South America and other parts of the world on the weekly internet radio program, Growing People from the Ground Up. Through the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture's See the Change program, you can select a family to sponsor and, with frequent updates, watch as they progress towards achieving goals to provide for themselves and feed their families. The work Self-Reliant Agriculture does today impacts individuals' lives tomorrow. Please visit us at www.selfrelientagriculture.org to read about recent projects, see videos, and view photos of families and the communities where they live. That's selfrelientagriculture.org.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus,
creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson in The Sea Around Us said,
at last return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end.
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth. Tune in Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Green Living Channel.
This is the Voice America Green Living Channel, helping to provide a sustainable future for us all.
You're tuned in to Growing People from the Ground Up with your host, Michael Bumstead, and his roster of special guests and weekly contributors. To find out more about the Self-Reliant Agriculture Program, or if you have a question or comment that we can address on a future program, please send an email to comments@selfreliantagriculture.org. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Growing People from the Ground Up. We're delighted to have Dr. Paul Johnston with us. Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, if you have anybody has any comments for Paul concerning nutrition, he is one of the experts that probably in the United States, maybe in the world, on nutrition. He's spent his entire career on animal science and nutrition needs. And he has a PhD in animal science from Oregon State University. He is one of the founders also in the program that we use that was originally designed by the Ezra Taft Benson Agriculture and Food Institute. Paul, could you give us just a short summary of how this occurred with this nutritional focus that's so unique in today's environment?
Well, Mike, in 1978, Dr. Laron Robison, my colleague, an agronomist at BYU, came to me and said he had a feeling that the best way he could serve his fellow beings would be to devise a program to sustain a family on a hectare of land. As you've pointed out, that's 2.5 acres. And he asked me to join with him in developing this program and looking at both animals and crops that we could put together to meet the nutritional needs of a family. So we spent about the next 5 years researching this topic to come up with what we felt was an ideal combination of animals and crops that would, in fact, meet the nutritional needs of a family for a year's period of time. And as you pointed out, there was also a cash crop. It could have been animals, it could have been vegetables or something else that we designed to be an economic generator that not only did the program meet the nutritional needs of the people, but it also provided an economic return.
Right. You know, when you first originally designed this, you and Laron determined that you could support, what was it, a family of 3.5 or 4?
Well, a family of 5 to 7, Mike, actually.
5 to 7? Oh, that's with animals added in, though, correct?
Well, that was our intention, was to have provide enough food for 5 to 7 people.
Right. And that was kind of the way I described it. Was I accurate in the way I described it earlier in this show with field crops and vegetables and animal protein, all those type of things added into their diet?
That's very correct. There are 3 nutritional centers in the program. One is the family garden, and family gardens are especially rich in vitamins A and C. And then the field crops, an energy source such as corn and a protein source such as beans, the energy coming from the corn and the protein from the beans, and then also animal products. And these would come from laying chickens, broiler chickens, and also milking goats.
Right. Well, tell us about the nutritional needs that every individual has here on the earth, no matter where you live.
Well, we need in our diets approximately 40 nutrients, and these are divided into things like water and protein and various vitamins and minerals and carbohydrates and fats. And there are certain amounts of each of these that we need to make sure that we have a healthy and well-functioning body so we can accomplish our work and accomplish our many other tasks that we have before us. And these are all necessary, as I say, to ensure proper and good health.
You know, it when I was a little kid, I heard from my mom all the time, eat your vegetables and all those type of things. As a grandparent now, I see my own children doing the same thing through their kids, trying to get them to eat the vegetables and the nutritional food. In the countries throughout the world that are developed, where we have a surplus of food, it's a very different situation, isn't it, than other countries who are underdeveloped, where they not sure what they're going to eat, regardless of, even if they don't have the choices we have, is what I'm trying to say.
No, they really don't. And because of that, there are certain nutrient deficiencies that are quite common in the developing world that are a great concern. There are things, because of the cropping system you've mentioned, monocropping, for example, if a family only produces corn in a country, in several countries of the world, that's the case, and depend upon it for their food, then such things as iron, iodine, calcium, zinc, and vitamins, various vitamins like A and C and so on, are deficient in the diet. These have some very serious impacts on the health of these families.
Can you give us some specific things that you have seen in the work that you have done in these developing countries?
Well, certainly the inability to resist disease is certainly far more disease prevalent or disease susceptible our families, because you take a nutrient like zinc, which is crucial for developing the immune system, and zinc is relatively deficient in diets like this, so their ability to resist disease is impaired. And then vitamin A deficiency is probably the leading cause of blindness with children in the developing world. In areas such as sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, like India, Bangladesh, several children are rendered blind by having too little vitamin A in their diets.
Wow. I can remember when I first started funding these programs, Paul, years ago in Ecuador, that when we went into some of these villages, and I got an image in my mind, and it's hard for me not to get emotional when I think about some of the kids that we first saw back in 1998, 99. They had scabs on their nose and ears, and this was from drinking parasitic water. And they were not, you wouldn't call them zombies, but they didn't have the energy level that the normal kid had. These are some of the things that you're trying to recognize here as deficiency in nutrition and so on.
You know, it's interesting you point that out, Mike. In a recent study we did in Kenya, and I guess we'll address that more later, we found that the children were only meeting 30% of their energy needs. And in the United States, we're worried about consuming too much energy. In the developing world, energy is actually a limiting factor. That in many of these rural societies, they can't eat enough food to meet their energy needs. And so the things you're talking about arise.
Wow. What are some of the countries you've worked in?
Well, I've had the opportunity, Mike, of working in Latin America, in Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, in Bolivia, Ecuador, and in Africa, in Ghana, Kenya, and Morocco.
Wow. So you speak Spanish fluently?
Well, I do speak Spanish, yes. And
okay,
I enjoy doing that. And I also speak French.
Okay. Well, I struggle with English, so you're way ahead of me on that. They start talking about this study we did in Kenya because it's so fascinating. I don't think we're going to have time that it deserves to talk about that on our next section. But so why don't we start talking about that right now? Maybe I can preface this just a little bit, talking about our experience in Kenya. We just moved into Kenya not long ago with a partner charity that we work with called Coins for Kenya. And they are in the southeast corner of Kenya, right close to Mombasa. And they had been there just like a lot of other people trying to do what they can do to help. And they built, 7 schools, I believe, Paul?
Yes, that's correct. Well, they built schools in 7 communities. That's right.
Right. And these are not small schools. They're from 500 to 1,200 kids, around 7,000 children total, I believe. And that's when you put that together with the rest of the family, that we're talking about a lot of people that they have an influence over and are trying to help, improve their lives. So they ask us if we would come in and help them with the agricultural needs of the families, because, like I said before, the majority of the people throughout the world are small farmers trying to feed their family on a small plot of land. And they weren't sure what they could do to help. So we asked them to do an analysis. And I'll let you take it from here. This is kind of the background so people understand how we got involved there in Kenya. You asked for a study of these students because we wanted to have an impact there at the school first. So I'll let you take it from there.
Thank you. Well, we, as Mike has mentioned earlier, the self-reliant program is based on nutrition. And so to have the greatest impact in Kenya, I suggested that we ask for at least 50 children that we could analyze for their nutritional status. And we can do that by knowing their age and weight and height, and also to get a 24-hour recall of the things that they were eating so we could determine their nutritive status, what nutrients were deficient in their diet. And lo and behold, they sent us names of 300 children, about 40 children from each of these villages. And it was a great, I took it to my class. I teach a class in international nutrition. I said, will you please help me analyze the diets and the nutritional status of these children? And it was a great learning experience for them. And so we went ahead and did that. And it's interesting, in the developing world where most everybody is malnourished, people don't recognize that. They don't realize that they're undernourished, as are their neighbors. And we found that about 50% of these children were stunted. And that's a result of years of undernutrition. And about 20% of them weighed too little for their height. And we call that wasting. And we call that acute undernutrition. That's related to something that's going on in their lives presently. And in Kenya, they've had a terrible problem with drought. And as a result, the yields of their corn crops have been severely impaired. And so they haven't been getting enough food, and that's really a problem. And of the food they have been consuming, it's seriously deficient in several nutrients. So we're getting this wasting because they aren't consuming enough food. And that's complicated by several nutrient deficiencies. And some of these nutrient deficiencies included things like vitamin A and vitamin C. Their basic diet is white corn, and white corn contains neither of these vitamins. And another big deficiency was calcium. And corn is essentially deficient or only negligible levels of calcium in corn. So this is something very serious, that vitamin A, as we've mentioned, is important for vision. It's also important for the immune system and several other functions. And vitamin C, along with calcium, is important in developing strong, solid bones and maintaining those bones. So those were very serious. And there were other things like iron deficiencies, and I mentioned zinc deficiency. And iron is crucial in the developing world because it affects the child's ability to learn. And with severe iron deficiencies, the cognitive development of a child is impaired, and also their motor skills. And so this has long-lasting effects on their lives. So those are some of the things that we observed, Mike, and it was quite interesting to see that.
Okay. We're going to be taking a short break in just a few minutes here, but just prior to that, when we come back from this break, we'd like to have you continue to talk about the study that you are discussing here in Kenya, and also tell us about how the people there in Kenya respond to this. We need to take a short break. We'll come right back with Dr. Paul Johnston and continue the discussion with Kenya.
Listening to the Voice America Green Living Channel for the latest in the sustainability and green movement for all of our futures today and tomorrow. The Voice America Green Living Channel. Spread the green.
In a world where parents struggle to feed their own children, the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture is dedicated to teaching families how to grow, what to eat, and how to become self-sufficient. By giving people the right tools to grow their food, we're not just growing crops, We are growing people. Your host, Michael Bumstead, president of Self-Reliant Agriculture, shares stories of struggle, success, and perseverance that families and communities experience in South America and other parts of the world on the weekly internet radio program, Growing People from the Ground Up. Through the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture's See the Change program, you can select a family to sponsor and, with frequent updates, watch as they progress towards achieving goals to provide for themselves and feed their families. The work Self-Reliant Agriculture does today impacts individuals' lives tomorrow. Please visit us at www.selfreliantagriculture.org to read about recent projects, see videos, and view photos of families and the communities where they live. That's selfreliantagriculture.org.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
This is the Voice America Green Living Channel, helping to promote a sustainable future for us all.
You're tuned in to Growing People from the Ground Up with your host, Michael Bumstead, and his roster of special guests and weekly contributors. To find out more about the Self-Reliant Agriculture Program, or if you have a question or comment that we can address on a future program, please send an email to comments@selfreliantagriculture.org. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Growing People from the Ground Up. We're talking to Dr. Paul Johnston about a study that he has conducted in the country of Kenya. Paul, could you continue to talk about this study in Kenya? And also, tell us the reaction of the people that they had there with your finding.
It was interesting, the reaction of the people, and it was very positive. One thing I've learned, that people in the developing world are extremely, should I say, humble. They're very anxious to learn. In the United States, we're somewhat spoiled, but these people are living in villages where they don't have electricity. So they don't have access to computers like we have here and all the wealth of information that we have. They don't have electricity in their schools. It's a very challenging environment. So they're very eager to learn. And so that's been just a very positive part of working in the developing world. And as we worked in Kenya, we were very pleased to find that there was another NGO called the Siegel Family Foundation that was very interested in what we were doing and gave us some money to start a gardening program. And the gardening program is a rotational garden. And the idea, we introduced the idea of the rotational garden in Kenya, started this out, the idea of providing the vegetable needs of a family throughout the year. And this is done by dividing the garden into four segments. And in the first segment, the vegetables that are needed are produced for a two-week period. And before that two-week period is over, the second section is started. So it'll supply the vegetables for the next two-week period. And the same is true of the third and the fourth sections. And as that comes to an end, then we go right back to the first section.
Right. So, Paul, you may be interested to know that our entire show next week is going to be dedicated to this gardening concept you talked about right here. We call this the rotational garden. So they have a continual crop coming to maturity so that the family always has fresh vegetables to eat. And Alan Silva is the expert on that. He's going to be our host next week talking about exactly what you're talking about right here.
Well, I won't talk further so much on that. One of the things we'll also have with that garden is on the perimeter of the garden, we'll have more permanent crops, things like cowpeas and cassava and other crops that take a longer period to grow, and a fruit tree like a banana tree or a citrus fruit tree to provide a wide array of vegetables, fruits, and some legumes. But we're using this garden as a teaching tool, Mike, for this coming year in my nutrition class. In one of the villages where Coins for Kenya is working is called Gona. And this village is probably the most disadvantaged of all the villages. And in the school, they have a club called the Health Club. And we're going to adopt those Health Club children into my international nutrition class. And we're going use the garden program in Kenya as a teaching tool to teach these children the different parts about nutrition. So we might say, for example, have carrots. And we'll say to the children, well, what do carrots supply? Well, carrots are extremely high in keratin, which leads to the formation of vitamin A. And that'll be a teaching tool to teach us, to teach the children, why is vitamin A so important for your health? And we'll do this with different vegetables and fruits and, say, legumes, and use them as a way to teach that. So those children will have the opportunity of seeing that garden grow there at the school, and they can relate very well to those different vegetables and fruits. Just say we hope to use that as a way. So I'm going to have my nutrition students work with individual children in Kenya to teach these principles. We hope that by the end of the year we'll have some good lessons that can be used not only in this village, but also the other villages in Kenya and hopefully other villages in the developing world.
You mentioned also earlier that one of their deficiencies was not only energy, you know, lack of 50% calorie necessary for a healthy life, but also calcium. How do you address that issue on the calcium deficiency?
Well, in the self-reliant program, calcium is actually the most limiting nutrient of all, and supplying it is somewhat challenging. If we don't drink milk or consume milk products, it's almost impossible to meet our calcium requirements. So in this program, it's designed to have milking goats. So as this program progresses in Kenya, it's anticipated that each family will have two milking goats. And those two milking goats between them will provide about 300 gallons of milk during the year's period of time. And that milk will be sufficient to supply the calcium needs of the children. Without the goats or some other milking animal, it is impossible to meet the calcium needs. So this is a crucial portion of the self-reliant program.
Why a goat instead of a milking cow?
Well, goats work out well, of course, because they don't consume nearly as much food as do cows. And a cow provides much more milk than the family needs. So two goats are a far better solution. And they will provide essentially what the family needs in way of calcium. And they can be sustained on this small acreage of land, which is sufficient for their needs.
Okay. It's my understanding that the smaller the animal, the more efficient the output of the animal for protein, as well as you just mentioned milk as well. Is that correct?
Well, generally that's the case, yes. And so goats tend to be a little more efficient than cows. And actually goats have ability to consume forage more efficiently than cows. With their athletic dexterity and their mouth, are able to eat some things that cows can't get to. So they can actually use a pasture more efficiently than a cow.
Right. When I was referring to small animals, I'm talking about the protein that the family consumes. A lot of times in these villages, Paul, you have on your report, you might address this for just a brief minute, about the we ask them questions, when was the last time that some of these children ate protein? And I think a couple of them answered probably sometime last year.
That's correct. We met with some of these children in this health club and seated around in a group and asked innocently the question, when was the last time you had any protein in your diet? And they thought for a moment or two, and they said, well, we think it was last year.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think you're having reference to the chicken as a very efficient animal to use. And in the system, broiler chickens are very effective in supplying high-quality protein to the diet. And they're very efficient. Say a chicken only requires about 1.5 to 1.6 pounds of feed per pound of gain, and beef cattle might need anywhere from 10 pounds of feed to a pound of gain. So So they're extremely efficient in converting the food to a source of edible protein and other important products.
Right. So the smaller the animal, the more efficient that animal is producing protein for the family consumption, correct?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
And that's why we end up using rabbits and chickens, and South America, it's guinea pigs.
Yeah, it's guinea pigs in South America. The guinea pig is an interesting animal, and the people, when they raise them in South America, they actually raise them right in the home. And that's, you know, often the case. And,
which causes problems in itself, by the way, for disease and cleanliness and things like that. But, you know, we use guinea pigs here a lot different than they do in South America. But we will, when I'd like to come back in a few minutes. Well, I guess we have a few more minutes right now. Maybe we could start talking about your experience you had in Guatemala.
Yes, we had a very interesting, well, in Guatemala, we started this self-reliant agricultural program in the early 1990s, and we're working with as many as 500 families in 23 different villages. It was a very large program. But there was one person, and there were many people who were very successful at it, but one was, you know, quite interesting. And this lady's name was Doña Prudencia, and she was... She was quite interesting because she was a widow and had a large family. And to help perpetuate the program, we would ask different people to be specialists within the community. Somebody might help teach gardens to their neighbors, or others might teach crops, and another might teach how to raise animals. And she was originally the garden specialist in her community, but lo and behold, she became very expert at raising chickens. And she was started with 10 broiler chickens in a cage up off the ground. And with the sell, when she got through with those 10 broiler chickens, she was able to eat a few, sell a few to pay back her debt, and sell a few more to buy more chickens than she had in the first place. And over time, she increased the size of her herd or flock of chickens to from 10 up to anywhere from 1 to 2,000 birds. And that
wow.
was really quite phenomenal. And then each morning, the children, she would get up with her children 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and process enough birds, as many birds as she could sell that day. And she would, after processing them, jump in the back of a pickup truck and ride from 30 to 60 minutes to the city of Chiquimula, where she set up a stall in the marketplace to sell her chickens. And over time, she not only developed her own chickens, but she organized her neighbors into cooperatives. So there were thousands of chickens being produced in this village, and she was the impetus for starting that.
So she was a regular little entrepreneur then.
She was great. And with the money that she derived from this, she was able to buy her own pickup truck and pay for the educational experience of her children. In these little villages, children rarely ever go to college or university education. And she was able to provide funds so that her children were able to realize that kind of an educational experience. So it was a great blessing in their home life, but also to the future and the education of her children.
How many families did she involve in this process? Do you remember?
Well, I don't recall now exactly the number, but there were several in that community who were involved in the process. And go ahead.
The figures that I've been told was like around 60 other families eventually.
It could have been as many as that, yes.
And there was a total of like 600,000 chickens that the entire co-op was eventually selling. She has a fleet of trucks now delivering all of these chickens to the village, to the major city below in Guatemala City, I believe. So she has gone from not only a garden, and she continues to raise her garden, by the way, and raise her own crops. But she's become a little entrepreneur and helped bless the lives of many, many families there. When we come back, Paul, we're going to take a few break in just about 30 seconds here. But when we come back, if you would give some advice to mothers in the developed world, what they could do to make sure that their family has the right proper nutrition. You're listening to Growing People from the Ground Up, and I'm Michael Bumstead, the host on this show.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Voice America Green Living Channel. Help to spread the green by involving your family and friends. You're doing your part. Now help them think green. Spread the green. The Voice America Green Living Channel.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Green, better, best. Never should you rest till your green is better and your better best. Tune in every Thursday morning for a look at residential construction with your hosts Bill Martin and Rick Goyette. Green, better, best will meld two minds, one of an architect.
That's Bill.
And one of a builder.
That would be Rick.
As they provide their expertise and that of their guests to show you which building practices are green, better, or best. Listen Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Green Talk Network.
This is the Voice America Green Living Channel, helping to provide a sustainable future for us all.
You're tuned in to Growing People from the Ground Up with your host, Michael Bumstead, and his roster of special guests and weekly contributors. To find out more about the Self-Reliant Agriculture Program, or if you have a question or comment that we can address on a future program, please send an email to comments@selfreliantagriculture.org. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Growing People from the Ground Up, and we have Dr. Paul Johnston with us. I'm asking to extend into our last segment of the show today, because we really haven't tapped all of the information that he has available for us. Paul, do you have another country you'd like to talk about first? And then I'd like to see if you have advice for all the mothers out there that are trying to get their children to eat their vegetables and drink their milk and all of those things that I've heard when I was a kid.
Well, the another country we worked, we first worked in the country of Ecuador to start this program. And it was in 1983 where we first extended it to another country, and we were invited by the Ministry of Health. Both the sub-minister and vice-minister of health were very interested in what we were doing and asked us to employ the program in a coastal region of Ecuador called Puerto Viejo. And it was the year after they had suffered from a tremendous El Nino storm, and these are these tropical storms that devastate the coast of Latin America, and the storm the preceding year had destroyed the roads and also the agricultural infrastructure. So things were in great distress when we came. And we started out with 10 families, and you couldn't believe how well those families did in employing the program that we had. We taught them improved methods of planting seeds, improved methods in seed selection, and also how to feed animals. And their crops flourished, as did their animal production. It was almost like a Garden of Eden. It was such a phenomenal response to this. And we worked hand in hand with the Ministry of Agriculture. And with that core of 10 families, they expanded it to 100 families over a period of a few years. And it was interesting to see how well the lives of the people in this area were improved by this simple program, They were amazed at how great a difference it made in their productive ability. Then you asked about, well, what can parents do today? Well,
sure, I'm sure.
I didn't have the ability to grow a self-reliant garden. I would simply purchase the foods that you would grow in a self-reliant system to give to my family, to have ample vegetables to supply to the children, to the family, vitamins A and C, and the other important nutrients we find in vegetables, and then introduce quality proteins like those in beans, which are a high quality and also have an important energy source that we need, but also, where possible, to introduce animal protein in the appropriate amounts. Eggs are a perfect source of protein because they're needed to grow an embryo from the small bought a full-fledged chicken. And so they're a very good source, and animal protein is necessary for important because it's far more valuable than others. So I would essentially take the three nutrition centers that we have in the self-reliant program, the garden, the corn and beans or the other major items in the diet, and also where we can to add animal products to fill the gaps. It's interesting, my colleague and I are involved in a study where we're surveying the parents' ability to stimulate their children to eat calcium-enriched foods. And it's interesting how when people come from the developing world, the developed world, actually the nutrition gets worse because of our great reliance on fast foods, which are extremely poor in nutritional value. So we're trying to work with parents, adolescents here in the United States, to encourage them, parents of adolescents, to stimulate the increase of calcium-rich foods in their home.
Is there one specific thing that you would recommend to mothers, such as stay away from the certain type of lettuce and buy greener vegetables, whatever?
Well, you know, there's a tendency to eat too much iceberg lettuce, for example, which has little or no nutritional value. And so to find lettuces which are high in nutritional value, romaine and some of the others are much better sources than the traditional iceberg lettuce. And to make sure is in your meals, there's a new program now by the USDA called My Plate. And in that My Plate program, and I would recommend that parents refer to the USDA program called My Plate, and it gives an excellent explanation on how to diversify the diet to meet the needs of their children.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Paul, for your time with us today. I do want to highlight one family before we run out of time here.
Well, thank you, Mike.
You bet. And you may know this family, Paul. It's the Yambirla family in Ecuador.
I'm not familiar with them.
Okay. I met them first in 2004 as a donor to this program, and this family lived in Otavala. And I have a image planted in my mind forever, and I'll try to explain this to our audience here. They live in a green, lush valley outside of Otavala, very friendly people, a mother and father, and a little boy and a little girl. And the parents of the father was also there, so they had one set of grandparents. We did analysis on their family first and found that they were malnutrition in weight and height and size. The children, they're deficient in calories, 50% deficient in calories, and extremely deficient in protein. They were basically eating the normal corn diet that the families there in Ecuador eat. I can remember, Paul, and to our audience, 18 months later. Well, first off, when I first met this family, that the little children, you could tell they were not healthy. Their hair was broken on the ends. Their skin just didn't look healthy. Little girl was too weak to walk. The father was carrying her. 18 months later, this family was self-sufficient. They had grown their entire food supply of 12 months food supply. And I can remember my family in a little room with 50-gallon barrels with a lid on them with all the food that they had created or, grown themselves and stored themselves along with the seed storage that we teach them for the next crop cycle. They were self-sufficient, totally. And with tears in the mother's eyes, I can remember her going to these barrels and picking up the lid and open it up and showing us all the corn. The next one would be all the beans. The next one would be all the quinoa. Mm. And they were eating guinea pigs and chickens for protein and so on and so forth. Their income actually increased also in our program. With tears in her eyes and this mother's eyes said that 18 months ago, we did not know what we were going to eat on a daily basis. But today we have a different problem, and she laughed and smiled. She was a very friendly young lady. She said, Today we have a different problem. We have to choose what we're going to eat. Well, I visited this family this last March. They have gone into the same situation you talked about with Prudencia in Guatemala. They are on the economic development end of things now. They have a little store. They have built a new house because they have developed themselves to a point where they can afford a new house. They've moved right up the street from the grandparents. The grandparents live in this same original house that they lived in. They have their own house now. They have a little store, and they continue the garden concept. So this program does work. I've seen it. So thank you, Paul, so much for your time today.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Hey, can I just say, as Mike's co-host, it has been really interesting to hear both of you, where you're definitely where the rubber meets the road. And for people like us that don't have an opportunity to do what you've done, it's been an incredible program. Thank you, both Mike and Paul. That was great.
Thank you, Tom.
Mike, why don't you set up, you already talked about our guest next week. Go ahead.
Alan Silva, president of Square Foot Gardening for next week. You will not want to miss this. He is an excellent speaker, a ton of information, and he would like to share all of the concepts of this rotational garden with you. Send your emails in to this show, Growing People from the Ground Up.
Thank you for tuning in to Growing People from the Ground Up. Please join your host, Michael Bumstead, co-host Tom Rockwood, and their guests next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Green Living Channel. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Green Talk Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit thegreentalknetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.